And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be God.
I don't know about you, but I have been enjoying the weather this summer immensely so far. It has not been super hot or very humid, and so far I'm a huge fan. Last Monday, we decided to take advantage of it. I do this often, actually, with my son Corbin. He and JJ are headed off to Young Life camp this morning, so they're doing that this week. But he said that I could share this story, even though it's not really about him. We went up to Mooresville, the old race town. It's now kind of a booming town. Decided a year ago to build like a $2.5 million skate park. And so we make the trek up there, and it works out pretty well. He needs practice driving, so that's a good hour and a half up and back of him driving. And then he usually skates, and I do, I don't know, all kinds of different things. I'll go running or go for a walk or do some of the antique stores that are in the area, that sort of thing. And this particular day, Monday, if you remember, it was gorgeous. And we showed up about 11. It was the first week, really, where all schools were finally off. So we were expecting it to be packed. And what was kind of funny is when we got there, there was one other kid that was skating. So Corbin had the whole park to himself, pretty much, which he really enjoyed. Once we sort of parked the car off and got out, I realized that there actually was another group of kids there. It wasn't just the two skaters, Corbin and this other guy that were skating. There was about five or six other guys there. They were all high schoolers, and they weren't skaters. They weren't using the park per se. They were just there to hang out. And as fast as I got out of the car, I was just sort of enveloped in their conversation because they were sort of right there at the entrance. And let me tell you something. This was as adult as it could possibly get. We went from hearing good music and good conversation, Corbin and I. Corbin immediately got on his stuff and just went to the other end of the park. He didn't even really want to put up with it. And while I'm kind of changing into some running gear and stuff, my mind or my ears just sort of got an influx of more cursing in 10 minutes than you could possibly imagine. I mean, it was every other word. The conversation topic was just terrible. When they weren't ripping on each other and bashing on each other and tearing each other down, they were tearing down other people that I didn't know. They were bragging nonstop. It was really just kind of like this one-upmanship conversation about drugs. And this girl eventually comes halfway through the conversation. She's younger as well. She's probably about the same age these guys are. Just in literally torn and disheveled clothes. I mean, it felt like it was wild. Just kind of watching her come in the scene. And she enters the conversation with F words flying all over the place. And she jumps right in the conversation and just starts talking about how she had them all beat. That all last week, through all of her exams, she was high. She went to school high. And this is me as I'm tying my shoes, just welling up with anger inside. Who are these kids? Like, all I wanted to do was just rip them all a new one, frankly. Just start telling them, well, you can imagine. I wanted to just teach them. The judgment that was going on in my head was just unbelievable. And I have to admit, as I was sort of getting music ready and going out, ready to go out for my run, it hit me. Oh my goodness, like a flood. It's not that audible voice, but you know when the Lord talks to you and just kind of brings something to your mind. And it sort of came with a bit of a chuckle. And the chuckle was, what makes you any better than them? And as I got studying this week on these verses, well, I think these verses, they answer the question completely, with clarity. And so what I want to do is I want to just look at three things in verse 7, this idea first of jars of clay. And that's the thing we tend to look at all the time. And here what I think tends to be the issue is that we look at this term jars of clay, and we all know what this means. It's clay, right? Back then, it was used for absolutely everything. We've advanced in 2,000 years. We use Tupperware now. But clay is used for absolutely everything, just keeping everything. It wasn't necessarily the decorative thing that it is now. We can use it to store things, but now you sort of go to an antique place, right, in Mooresville, and there's a pottery thing set up there, and you pay astronomical prices for these beautiful kind of artistic pots. That's not really what's going on here. These pots now are these everyday broken and chipped pieces that are used purely for just holding things that really aren't worth a whole lot. And they can barely hold things as they are. When they break, you do what with it? You throw it out. What they used to do is they took it to a field, the potter's field. And so you had this field that was just all this broken up clay. These things were just thrown out. But what we like to do is we like to focus on the jars of clay and sort of glory in the fact that that's us. And, well, you know, how awesome is it that we're jars of clay? And let's embrace that and sort of create a sermon off that. Well, here's the issue with the jars of clay bit that I sort of want to get across to us before we move to the two more important things in the verse, I think. And this is the first thing, is that And actually, as Mark and I were talking this week, it sort of came up. It's this. It's that Christians are not the only ones that are jars of clay. So, for instance, as I was hearing that conversation, and almost in the middle of it, without saying a word, I didn't say a word. But in the middle of that conversation, who in that area, in that space, who were jars of clay? Well, definitely that group of kids and that girl that came in, and I was, and Corbin, and that other guy that was skating. And if I were to ask who in this room today is a jar of clay, it's every one of us. It talks about humanity. And so what we do is we don't take this idea of jars of clay and figure out how to get saved from being a jar of clay into something else. But what it also does is it reminds us where we came from. So I just have two verses that sort of do that. And you know these verses well, but just let them sink in again. Jeremiah says this, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick." And actually, like the NIV here says, beyond cure. I like that. Like there's no cure for it. You cannot go out and find a medicine for it. Who can understand it? And then there's a verse that really puts it all together, and it's Ephesians 2, and we read this, and it says, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, like the rest of mankind." What we have here is this universal truth that all of us together, all of humanity, are jars of clay. And we see that here, if you look in verses 4:3 through 4:7, kind of the passage we're looking at, this idea of jars of clay, if we want it defined very specifically, goes back into 4:6 with that term heart. Our hearts are jars of clay. And then we go back into 4:4 and it's our minds are jars of clay. We are fragile, very fragile, so much so that like pottery, we have no say in what we're being turned into, in what we're being made into, whether that's for good or bad. We easily chip, we easily break, and that's not our exterior always, that's our hearts and that's our minds. I think the outcome really of this idea of jars of clay, before we get into one of the other words, is this. is that what we tend to do is we tend to figure out a way that we can take this jar of clay that we are, whether it's the outside or the inside, and we try to figure out how on earth we can fix it up. And so what came to my mind is maybe for some of you younger people, I don't know if you spend more time actually using your earbuds for what they're made for, or if you enjoy more shopping for accessories for your accessories. Adults, what we do, right, is we go out and we find the most beautiful purse that we can find. The most beautiful wallet? Man bag? Yeah, I'll stop right there. guys, I don't even know if we care about the wallets we carry. We probably have other things that we worry about with exterior. But what's interesting is what people put into that purse. You notice whatever purse, whether you go into the mall right down the street here and you shop in Prada and you buy the most expensive purse that you can find, you still only have a set bit of money that you can put in it, right? So really the jar of clay, the thing that's holding it, does it really, really matter? The way that we tend to do this, right, is religiously, spiritually, morally. We try to clean ourselves up. That's what I did when I heard these kids talking. My goodness, I immediately felt so good about myself. I am so different than these kids. My goodness, how dare they? Who do they think they are? Why? How lost they are. How broken they are. They weren't necessarily being moral or spiritual with their jar of clay. What were they doing? Well, they were just being outright rebellious. And they were being prideful about it. They were taking who they were and they were just bolstering it as much as they said they could. And they were showing off that that was somehow beautiful. In the end, really, we know that this idea of trying to prettify a jar of clay is like putting makeup on a pig, really. I had a friend who thought that they were getting into farming. This goes back a few years. This was really fun. She didn't really actually think she was getting into farming, but one of the things that she jumped into, along with some other things, is buying chicks. That's kind of a big thing right now. You can make eggs and the whole deal, and I'm all for it. I think it's great. Some of us do it here, and it's awesome. Good eggs. But what I loved was that, you know, the chicks that run in the dirt, that lay eggs, that play in the ground, that maybe sometimes get eaten by snakes and all that kind of good stuff, what she enjoyed doing was dressing them up in cute little clothes, putting little hats on them. And it's like, that doesn't change them from being chickens. They're farm animals, right? And as sort of like farming 101, don't dress up your animals, especially your farm animals. But then what do? Well, this jars of clay, this takes us to really the words that I want to pull out next. And it is this idea of this surpassing power. If we are all clumped together because of jars of clay, no pun intended, and we're all put in the same basket, so to speak, and we're not able to get out of it by ourselves, then what is it that changes us? What is it that makes us different? It's the surpassing, excelling, extraordinary power of God. It's the you can't exaggerate or overstate power of God. It's the life-changing, creating power of God. Like he says in the beginning of verse 6, where it says, let light shine out of darkness. We're supposed to think about creation there. There's a play on words there. The same God that created all that is from nothing will actually take nothing spiritually and make it something. Bring it to life. And I really like this idea. It's not mine, but this you can't exaggerate or overstate the power of God. Because again, what do? As much as we can. Man, how do we love? We might not carry around purses, but we love to do this. We are perfect at telling fish tales, aren't we? The fish we catch are always bigger than our arms can spread. The jumps that we go off are always taller than we can make. And we're in the air so much longer than we think we are. But we just love to go there. And with our God, we cannot exaggerate his power. What does this power do? He uses this power to transform our hearts and our minds. So in verse 4, where it says, in their case, those that are perishing, The ones that are blind, the scripture says veiled, they cannot see. In their case, the God of this world, who is Satan, has blinded the minds of unbelievers. Okay, so the mind and the heart, the inner person, now has the faculties to not be able to understand anything of God. They are dead and blind. And so what does God do? Like he did with creation when there was darkness and chaos in the first verses of Genesis, and the Spirit hovers over it and begins to create, what's the first thing that happens? Light shines. When God enters, light appears. And so what we have is Ezekiel summarizes it perfectly. He creates light in darkness. He says, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. In a word, what he does is regenerates us. He takes what is dead and makes it alive. He removes the veil. He gives us eyes that can see and receive the third word that's in this verse. And that is the treasure that he has given us. Do you see, before his surpassing power does anything with you, you can't receive his treasure. You just can't. So the surpassing power comes into your life and makes you hospitable so that you can have this treasure deposited in you. So what is the treasure that is deposited in you? In verse 4, it's the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. And in verse 6, it is the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Hopefully those two statements sound pretty much the same. What we learn from these two verses, the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, is that this treasure in us, what the surpassing power of God does for us is gives us this treasure and helps us to know it, trust it, and depend on it. And what is it? It's Christ and who he is. Christ is the fullness of God, Paul says in Colossians. Christ is the exact representation or likeness of God, the author in Hebrews says. And John says that he is Christ, or that Christ is God. And what did Christ do? He became man and he lived among us. So we see that the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, first is who Christ is. We are able to understand and receive who Christ is, that he is God and he became man for us. But that's not enough. The second thing that we learn, or this treasure that's in us, this treasure is knowing, trusting, and depending on Christ for what he has done. And the verse, kids, that we have learned, well, adults, when we were kids, and I think even most kids, you know this song or this verse in John 3:16. I think it sums it up so perfectly. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And I'll tell you, for most of these verses, this is just a little side note. What I typically do is I tend to look up the ESV or whatever I want to quote, and I throw it in there. And the men's Bible study got talking about translations that we use and how we memorize verses and how we have memorized verses throughout the years. And I don't know about you, but this is one of those verses that I learned from day one going to church. And way back then, I learned it in the KJV. And then there was a time in my life where it was all NIV. And so I learned it in the NIV. And then there was a time where I used, one or two other translations. I won't go down all those paths. And I learned it in that. And eventually I learned it in the ESV. And what I thought I would do is just write it out without looking at any of the Bible actual translations. And I realized that in this passage, I have three different translations. So I don't know about you, if you have verses memorized the way I do in a whole bunch of translations at once, But for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. God freely and generously gave Christ to those who are willing, for those who believe. And so what is it that Christ did for us? What is it that we put our faith in? What is it that we believe? Yes, who Christ is, but what did he accomplish? And boy, it's so good just to review this stuff, isn't it? Christ revealed the love and justice of God. Boy, this week I'm going through Tim Keller's book on Jonah. There's a handful of people that have been listening to the sermons. We're like all into Jonah right now, mostly because over in Crescent Heights, we're going through Jonah. And so there's a bunch of us that have just been talking a lot about Jonah and having fun with Jonah. And one of the things that Tim Keller brings out over and over and over again is that one of the problems that Jars of Clay has understanding God is love and justice. Those two things do not work together. They don't. And without the surpassing power of God to transform you and then to give you the treasure of understanding and trusting how God puts together, how he's able to work so that his love is satisfied and his justice is satisfied, is beautiful, isn't it? And how does he do that? By Christ. Christ did what? He became sin for us. And then he goes and he dies and he pays the price for us. And that covers God's justice, doesn't it? And then what that does is that frees God fully to love us. Because there's nothing in the way now. We are seen through the blood of Christ. We are seen as saints. We are seen perfect. I will say that until I die and it will blow me away. I will say that and not understand fully how on earth that's possible. I know the things I did last week. And yet God calls us perfect, but it's because of Christ. If you respond to the gospel message this morning, if it makes sense to you, if it clicks, if what I've sort of just said in these last 15 minutes and you're just sitting there going, yes, yes, that's true. Yes, I agree. Then you are a testament to the surpassing power of God working in you. That is not knowledge or truth that you are able to come to on your own. And what that should lead us to do is worship. What we've learned so far already in the two Psalms of Asaph is that we are called, once we get this, to have hearts that are full of thanksgiving, to follow through on our vows, which just simply means to respond in love, which is obedience, right? And to trust in God, to just depend on him. But then I'm sure that there might be some of us this morning who are struggling. And as I talk and as I go over things that maybe some of you have heard a million times, and you kind of sit back in your seat and you fold your arms and you say, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. And I plead with you, I ask you to ask God to make it make sense. Ask him to do that. And what you will see, the way God proves himself over and over and over again, his surpassing power is by the miraculous event of new life, of regeneration, of just understanding things that you didn't get before. And so even as we come to the table this morning, again, for those of us that are just so thankful that we have understood this for years, maybe months or days, we come and we remind ourselves with the bread and the wine that it is the extraordinary power of Jesus. It is the extraordinary power of God, truly the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, that works in jars of clay. So yes, maybe for a moment,
And we do this, don't we? We don't glory in it, though. Trust me when I say that. When we start our service off and we confess to one another that we are broken messes, another word for that is that we could say that to one another. You are jars of clay. That shouldn't put a smile on your face and make you go, yeah, I'm ready to tackle the world. That should go, oh boy, I better be dainty with myself and not get in any trouble. The wind better not be blowing too hard. But we don't stop there. We remember that the extraordinary power of God has transformed us and is transforming us. And so this meal reminds us of that. And again, if this is something that you are still struggling with and trying to understand and you're grappling with it, we will ask later maybe that you can come and talk with one of us, Mark, myself, one of the elders that you'll see. But truly, truly, I ask for you just to spend these next 5-10 minutes in prayer. Just call out to a God that maybe you don't know. Maybe you're not accustomed to praying. And just ask him to reveal himself to you and to make these truths real in your life.